And we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so then we have on the approval of agenda, I have four add-ons. One of them is going to come under consent agenda. I believe that's a CD that we need to redo. And then the another one is the truck payment under fire and rescue. And then there are two under road construction, one for storm damage, and then the tax forfeit land people dumping on that. So those are the four additions. I need a motion and a second, please.
Make a motion to accept the changes to the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, then we move to the consent agenda. The change to that is the CD that's coming due. So, but I'll need a motion to approve all of that.
And you want to renew it, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
With the forum fund, yeah.
Yeah, and that we've just kind of been rolling over. I don't know if is there anybody want discussion on that, or it just kind of...
It's just something you're doing every time a CD renews, is putting it into the forum fund.
We need to vote on that.
Just the whole consent agenda.
Just through the consent.
To approve it, please.
So I need a...
I'll make the motion.
Motion on the consent.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Then we move to open forum. Is there anybody that has anything to say? Nope. Okay, then we go to new business. Mr. Barge, I believe.
Yes. Well, again, thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council, giving me the opportunity to sit in front of you today and kind of talk about our Crow Wing County sirens that we currently have and where we'd like to go in the future. I'm Clayton Barge. I'm Crow Wing County's Emergency Management Director. I've been the Director for Emergency Management with Crow Wing now for just going on 3 years. Prior to this, I was a police officer with the City of Baxter and then retired from the military as well. My background as far as education is, I have a bachelor's in emergency management and then through one of those with the military, and then got my master's in technology and homeland security management as well. So it kind of fit when the opportunity arose with the county to take the position to transition from law enforcement from the city side to the county. So I'm still a licensed deputy as well, so do respond to calls if the need requires. And again, very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in. As far as emergency management, every county, for those of you who aren't aware, in the state has an emergency manager. It was really directed after the shortcomings after 9/11 and also Hurricane Katrina. There was a real disconnect between local governments, the counties, and the resources needed to respond to specific disasters at the state and federal level. So the emergency manager, again, we are, you know, kind of that conduit or that coordination between local authorities and the state and federal agencies. So like the storm disaster that we had here, you know, stemming from June 28th and through July 7th on there, you know, having that ability to go out, reach out to the townships, find out how much damage we have out there, and then getting those tallies, those totals together, making sure that we meet our disaster threshold, and then I'm working with the state to say, putting in the request with our council members, or county board members to do that declaration of local emergency, to getting that to the state and then coordinating with the state to get that preliminary damage assessment team down, which will be coming down next week to review those damages. And then once that gets approval from them saying we met our threshold, I can do the letter to the governor requesting for state disaster assistance, which is a partial reimbursement, 75% reimbursement for any of those costs that the townships or the city has for that disaster response. So it's not 100% reimbursement, but a 75% reimbursement or cost, particularly if it's substantial, is a good chunk of change that the city can then utilize for other things rather than it just going for that disaster response. So today I'm here to talk about the Crow Wing County's emergency warning sirens. When I first started in this position, I'd asked, well, what does that look like as far as what sirens that we currently have, what state are they in, what's our complete list as far as the sirens that we have. And as I kind of dug into it a little bit more, again, being, you know, new to the position, what I learned from that is the overall sirens are the responsibility for the local municipalities or the townships. So the constituents within those areas find a need for that. Normally, those needs are related to, you know, parks, recreations, outdoor trails, you know, golf courses, those areas where folks are going to be outdoors. The discussion as far as, you know, we've heard them referred to as civil defense sirens or tornado sirens. They're meant for outdoor warning of the public. And what we try to push for the public is that if you hear one of those sirens, is to, you know, seek shelter and gain additional information. So I do have a presentation today, and I apologize for Councilmember Bradley, because I believe he's seen most of it already in our workshop.
You can never learn.
So we had a workshop this spring, and I've sent invites to all stakeholders throughout the county that had emergency warning sirens, trying to get everybody together, kind of do a collaborative effort as far as what can we do, collaborating from the county side and then working with all the stakeholders, city and the townships, to kind of better manage what we currently have out there to make sure when that day comes, when we need them to work, that they work. So again, my just again, Clayton Bark, Crow Wing County Emergency Management. I also have Liz Gleason, who is a coordinator that also works with me with emergency management. She's currently on maternity leave and will be back in October. But if you ever see her name, again, she works with emergency management as well. The first one worked. This one. Well,
we're jinxed.
It's sitting. It's got the little. The
I've got mine up and running. If you would just want to plug into this, your PowerPoint.
Oh, is it up down there? Oh, perfect. Yes. If you have it up, that would be great. But yeah, I have the spinning wheel of death.
Right. Okay, then he can have this if he wants it. Good.
Did it come up?
Oh. And click.
There we go.
There it goes. Okay. I'll see if the video works. I did a video. It's from Texas, but again, the concept for the actual warning sirens is the same. And it doesn't look like it. No. All right. That didn't work. Technology is great when it works.
Great.
Yeah, I don't know, this one locked up as well. The video presentation, or the presentation, essentially talks about outdoor warning sirens and what that looks like. Again, that they're not tornado sirens, they're not civil defense sirens, they're outdoor warning sirens. And it talks about how, you know, having that, when that siren goes off, we want the public to, again, seek shelter and gain additional information as far as what the actual event is. And that event could be a severe storm. That event could be, as we're seeing in Itasca right now, could be wildfires. So there are cities that are activating their outdoor warning sirens to do evacuations of those cities. We had the Flanders wildfire this spring, have that wind shifted and headed toward Cross Lake. We utilized the Cross Lake warning sirens to, again, warn the population as far as an impeding evacuation for the city as well. So they can be utilized for that purpose too. The
Go to the next one, right here.
The history and best practices on working with stakeholders. The Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers puts out kind of guidance on how emergency sirens should be facilitated or operated, and we utilize their guidelines as far as setting those sirens off. We're going to talk about kind of the public feedback that we've had from the public, some of the technical assessments that have been done, modernization needs, and we have some sirens within the county that are probably almost three decades, if not more, old. So looking at what do we need to upgrade those. Operation and preventative maintenance plan is kind of the whole kind of premises where we're at today, wanting to make sure that all of our sirens are maintained at a set standard. And then the discussion as far as the working group that we get, and then the RFP, request for proposal, that were pushed out. Crow Wing County currently has roughly 52 sirens throughout the county. A majority of those sirens are within the city of Cross Lake, Brainerd, and Baxter. So a good portion of our sirens are again within those kind of large populated areas. Particularly Cross Lake has a lot of trails, outdoor activity areas. Same with Baxter and Brainerd as well, outdoor parks. So really the intention for the outdoor warning sirens is to kind of cover or reach all those areas. We have it was also brought up during one of the county board meetings. We have an unorganized territory. We have kind of the BIR area, large camping ground area, other outdoor facilities. So, you know, having an outdoor warning siren within those areas as well to notify the public that, hey, there's something going on and they need to seek additional information, and then working out what that information should look like. The ownership of maintenance, we talked about county and the city and townships are kind of have the overall responsibility for. We have one homeowners association that also has a siren that maintains the siren that's hooked to the county infrastructure. So although the cities and the townships are responsible for the putting in the sirens, the county ultimately is responsible for the infrastructure that sets them off. So we have that infrastructure in our dispatch center, and then we have tower sites located throughout the county as well, where we have infrastructure that sends off that VHF paging system to be able to actually activate the sirens. So currently, when a siren is activated, our dispatch center gets that message from the National Weather Service. The weather's, they review it. In there, it'll say which areas of the county are going to be affected by the storm. And then our dispatch center will set the sirens off based off of that. Once they push that button and it sends it off, they don't know if the sirens are going off or rotating or getting any feedback. So in the future, kind of our five-year plan looking at is how do we upgrade these systems to ensure that they are more of a on-demand, being a two-way cellular option, where when you get that wireless emergency alert that there's a tornado from the weather service, that are some of the sirens within that polygon area are being set off as well. And I'll kind of touch about it a little bit more here momentarily. Here's currently the list of sirens that are located throughout the county. As you can see, the city of Brainerd and Baxter has the largest concentration, and then Cross Lake has several sirens, 11 sirens spread out through the area. We also have, again, kind of ones and twos throughout the area, Ideal Township, one over in Garrison, obviously three up here at 50 Lakes, spread out throughout the county. You know, we get individuals asking, well, you know, we'd like a siren in our area. It's really about need. We can't have sirens that cover the entire county. It just isn't economically feasible. That's why we focus on those areas that are high concentration of outdoor activities, campgrounds, and so forth, where people are going to be outdoors, maybe not with their phone. This is, if you haven't seen one before putting in a siren, or maybe if you're looking at, we have folks that have an old siren, they're looking at upgrading with a new siren. This is a sound plan provided by Federal Signal and shows kind of the decibel level on what that looks like in the areas that would actually cover. So before putting in a siren, you get a sound plan and say, okay, well, is it covering the areas that is intended to cover and the reason for us wanting to put it in the siren? I know it's going to be a little bit, it'll vary too, if depending on the time of year or weather conditions. During the winter, when there's no leaves on the trees, that sound will carry. Or if we have a severe, you know, storm coming in where there's high winds or heavy rains, then it's going to dissipate as well. I talked about how the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers kind of puts out that guidance as far as how outdoor warning sirens should be maintained and set off. Current criteria is tornado warnings, and those tornado warnings are from the National Weather Service. The National Weather Service, when that tornado warning goes out, majority of the time those are from radar indicated. So, hey, we have a tornado warning, it's from the Weather Service. There may not be any type of visual confirmation that there's anything on the ground, but the Weather Service is seeing rotation on their radars that appears to be that of the start of a tornado. So then they'll send out that warning. Currently, the way the radar system is set up, and the radar that we utilize for the most part for Crow Wing County is out of Duluth, between 6,000 and 8,000 feet, or anything below 8,000 feet, there's really not a good indication as far as what they're able to see from the National Weather Service. So there's a huge gap between that ground level and 8,000 feet, and there's a lot of storm activity that happens within that area. Initiative that we're working with currently with the state is to get a low-lying weather radar in Brainerd. We've been working with the city of Brainerd on that through ClimaVision and also through the state on getting that completed. We have the memorandum of agreement signed with the city of Brainerd, working with the company getting that installed. We were hoping to have that installed here by the spring, but now we're looking at potentially this fall or by early next year having that installed. And what that will give us is that will cover that area below 8,000 feet where a lot of those low-lying storms are coming into the area. Our dispatch center will see that. The National Weather Service is going to be able to see that, and that's going to give us a greater opportunity for early warning and notification. So when we see those storms come in, yes?
For what distance on that?
It'll cover all of Crow Wing County. It'll go into Cass County ways. I don't have the exact how far out, but it'll cover far enough where we'll have Crow Wing County covered, and then it'll be able to assist also in some of the neighboring counties as well.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, are there other,
It's like a 30 or 40 mile radius then.
Correct, yeah, correct.
Are there other systems like that to the west of us?
There is, and forgive me, I don't have...
We get our weather.
Yeah, so there's a county to the west, and the name eludes me, but they are in basically the same issue that we were in. There was a huge dead area where the National Weather Service radars didn't really overlap, so they had a huge dead area, and they had a severe, they actually had a tornado that went through, and I believe somebody was killed during that, and that was a real push, and they ended up getting this one of these low-lying radars to be able to cover that area. So. And it gives a little lot more definition to what those storms look like, so they can actually see, okay, what's actually transpiring. The other activation means is those first responders or weather spotters are on the ground. Every spring we do a weather spotter training at the Land Services building in Crow Wing County, or at the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office Land Services. And the National Weather Service will come down and they'll provide a training to law enforcement and just the general population of citizens wanting to learn more about the weather and be a trained weather spotter. And what that does is they register with the National Weather Service, and then if they see something, they can call it in, they'll give that information to the Weather Service, they can verify that yes, they've been to the training, and then the Weather Service will take that information as they're sending out their warnings. The testing of our sirens happens on that first Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. And again, we ask our local law enforcement or in those areas of those sirens to contact or dispatch whether or not they hear them sirens. But unless you have somebody at each individual siren site, sometimes that gets missed. And even then, some of our law enforcement will roll their window down. Hey, do you hear the siren? Yeah, we hear the siren, but you find out that it's the siren from like three sirens over, and the siren closest to them isn't working, but they do hear a siren, so they call that back saying it is working. So we're finding that out as well.
In that maintenance, is there a way to set that siren off if we think we've got a problem? I mean, not during a standard testing period?
Yeah, they have ability, the maintenance companies, they all have the ability, those who work on the sirens, to be able to activate them to actually test to see if they're going on.
Do you have a code?
Say again?
Our maintenance person directly behind you.
Yes.
Can set ours off.
Yeah. And like we were talking earlier too, maybe you can set them off, but it could be something in the programming or the communications board where, yes, you can set it off, but maybe it's not receiving that signal like it's supposed to be from the VHF signal from our dispatch center. So maybe the siren works, but it's not going off because...
So then should we request them to set it off at the county level, or isn't that available?
It is available, but we try to refrain from setting off the sirens just for the sake of setting them off because, people
wonder
what's going on.
Well, if there wasn't one working, I think there's not one. See if it is.
Or, like I say, that first Wednesday of the month, having somebody out at that siren site during those tests, if somebody said, hey, we don't think that's, that siren is working, having somebody from, law enforcement, the sheriff's office, public works, whatever it might be, out at that one siren to see
if it's working. Well, if you think it isn't working, month between tests, that's
not good either.
No.
So, and we can kind of talk about that more too, what options might be out there as far as getting it, ensuring that it's functioning or not. We talked about the tornado warnings when it's set off, those destructive winds, it says measure at or imminent at or above 70 miles an hour. We're going to be modifying that a bit to basically say anything in excess of 70 miles an hour. When we noticed in our last storm over the past week, we had a lot of, 70 mile an hour is coming from the National Weather Service. I consulted with them saying, hey, obviously if it's at that 70 mile an hour mark, we want to be able to set on because that's getting pretty, devastating winds. However, the way that they send out their warnings after I talk with them, they're like, we're sending it out at a block of 10 at a time. So anything between 60 and 70, we're sending out the, hey, this is what the wind gusts are going to be. And right now, where our policy is, we were setting them off, it could be 61 miles an hour, and we're setting off sirens, to a point where they're getting, kind of blue sky warnings, which we don't want, where people become kind of disillusioned by the sirens because they're going off all the time. We don't want that either. So, what's that happy medium to ensure that we're ensuring the public safety is there, but we're not oversetting the sirens off where folks become, numb to it as well. They just don't get the sirens are going off again. They're not taking the appropriate action. System capabilities and limitations. We talked about that range. Depending on the type of year, we have some sirens that are close to lakes, so they have that lake effect where it'll cover a larger area because it's getting the sound waves over across the lake. Environmental conditions, wind, rain, and snow are going to cause issues with that. And then the backup power systems and triggers. We have some sirens in the county that don't have any power backup, so when we lose power, they don't go off. So trying to work with stakeholders to fix that issue. We've had battery backup. We'd like to get everything on a battery backup, so if we lose power, that we still know that the sirens are going to go off and operate as they're intended. And I have some more kind of maintenance photos on here as well that some of the challenges that we've had when it comes to battery backup.
So currently we have three in the county?
Three in for the city, or for the 50 lakes area. 52 total for the entire county. 52 working sirens. The IPAWS, or Wireless Emergency Alert, we talked about public comments as far as they want to get. Why isn't our area covered with a warning siren? We talked about why we have sirens out there for that outdoor warning, not for individuals that are in their homes. That's why we encourage folks to also have an indoor, a weather radio in their home, so they, if they're in their homes, that'll sound and that they're not relying on an outdoor warning siren to be given that notification. Confusion of what the siren means. Again, the intent, it does not mean a civil defense siren or tornado siren. It's an outdoor warning siren. Sirens are a warning tool for public to seek shelter and obtain additional information. So we want folks to, again, seek shelter and, again, get additional information. Because it could be in Brainerd, we have the railroad that goes through there. If we have an anhydrous ammonia spill from a railroad car and we want people to shelter in place, we would set the sirens off for that as well and then get a wireless emergency alert pushed out to the residents saying, hey, we had a chemical leak, we're asking residents to shelter in place. So
how many of the sirens out there are actually can carry voice, like the one outing, they can actually talk across theirs. I don't even know if our two new ones, if we can't do that.
I don't think any of our sirens that I'm aware of, and that's kind of one of the things going through this process, is I don't know what we currently have in the county. And by going through this maintenance and having one company check each one of our sirens, that I can have a criteria of, hey, what is the capabilities of each of our sirens? So as we look at upgrades or improvements in the future, that we know what we currently have and what we maybe need to strive for later on as well.
Yeah, well, to what Mark said about, and your chemical spill, you know, I hate to say it, but when I hear a siren, I'm going outside to look at the sky.
Yeah.
And if it was for a chemical spill, I don't think there's much of a problem here, but, that would maybe trigger me to go outside a lot.
Yeah.
And that's just...
And
that's where if there was a loudspeaker of sorts like that.
And there, like I said, that is a capability that is out there on sirens, but right now, because of, emergency manager was responsible for putting up the sirens. I don't know what was purchased and what the capabilities of the current sirens we have are. And that's what I'd like to learn.
We didn't get federals. We got the ones out of Wisconsin.
The American Signal, I think it is. American Signal, which are great sirens as well. So.
Well, ours are on our second, and actually, this is going to come up later. Chester, did you get a chance to look at that one on 136? And I said, well, what's the story?
I could not find it. Well, the fuse or anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the receiver is not working.
Yeah.
So it's not, the siren might be fine. They all got receivers. It might be that. I don't know. Until we test it again.
And after in our meeting we had earlier this spring, talking to people, it sounds like ours seem to have more issues than the federals.
More challenges than,
Which most of them are federals, but.
Again, the companies that we selected, again, they work on both federal and American Signal, so that's not an issue. And again, that's all they do is sirens. The only thing they do is work on sirens.
Is there hardware there that can, you guys can monitor sirens from your base, so to speak?
Currently there is not.
Nothing like that.
No, currently there is not, but that's what we want to be able to happen in the future, is to have that communications ability where our dispatch center and the infrastructure at the towers, at the siren sites, and with their dispatch center, they continuously talk with each other. There is that capability out there, but first, as far as getting our sirens to a set standard and then again upgrading them, because then it'll show when they hit that siren in the dispatch center, it'll actually tell our dispatch center, yes, it was activated, yes, it's there's an audible tone going on. Yes, it is rotating or it isn't rotating, if it was supposed to be rotating. And then it also lets, if there's issues with any batteries, it'll tell that to our dispatch center, hey, there's a communication issue with this the siren side, or something wrong with the batteries, or an additional drain on the batteries, it'll note that as well. So we can, again, address those beforehand, so we're not going 2 or 3 months where, okay, well, that one didn't go off or that, so. And that's where we're striving in that direction, and this is kind of the first steps of getting, hopefully getting there. So, FEMA's National Intent IPAWS Integrated Public Alert Warning System. When you get that alert on your phone, that tornado warning, that is that wireless emergency alert that you'll get that makes that loud tone on there, and that's only going to a specific area that the National Weather Service draws a polygon on. And I'll show you what that looks like here momentarily. Some of the complaints that we've gotten from the public is we've gotten a tornado watch that was sent out by the National Weather Service, but you didn't send us anything for a tornado warning. So the county as a whole will not get a tornado warning. It'll only be that section of the county that storm is intended on passing through based off of what the National Weather Service is issuing. No intent on one specific hazard, and use all hazards, kind of all hazards approach. We put the Maui fires on there as well because that was a lesson learned. They utilize, again, rather than having an outdoor warning siren, Maui has tsunami sirens. So if there's an earthquake, there's a tsunami that normally follows, and what they don't want is, they have the tsunami or the tsunami siren, so they don't, they want, what they do want during a tsunami is the people to go inland, and they keep teaching tsunami sirens, so they didn't set the sirens off, because they were worried during the wildfires that if they set the sirens off, people would think they were tsunami, and they'd be going towards the fire versus going away from the fire. So some lessons learned there as well. Again, you know, educating the public that they're not a specific hazard, but it's an outdoor warning for you to seek shelter and gain additional information. And as I just, again, there's going to be a messaging part on my part from a county emergency manager standpoint to get that messaging out there. I've done numerous interviews with Lakeland News, the Brainerd Dispatch on sirens, and just, you know, just continue to plug away and work with them and getting that messaging piece out there as well.
You know, it used to be that the sirens would, when they set them off, wasn't it used to be a code? Like if it was solid, it'd be for weather. If it was on and off, it was a fire.
Yeah, and what they kind of recommended is just one tone, because people, for the most part, you know, aren't going to know the different tones. So if it's just one tone, you know, just saying, hey, if you hear the song, you hear the siren, go inside, check with your local weather station, get that information as far as what's going on. Check the county website if there's anything that's posted on there. Like during the Maui or the Flanders wildfire, we posted on our main county website as far as what was going on and evacuations and procedures with that. So, and public expectations, again, you know, we put a lot of money into the infrastructure. We want to make sure that it's maintained and that it's going to go off when we want it to, need it to go off. Another option that's out there is our Crowing County Alerts. Is the option for individuals, you know, we put this out to our campground, so we have campers that come up for an extended period of time. They can go into our Crowing County Alerts and they can put their information in there, and you can go through and select what you want to get alerts on. You can select weather, so anytime the National Weather Service sends out any type of weather alert, it could be a dense fog advisory, it could be a heat warning, that you'll get a text sent to your phone, what those are. And that also goes for the tornado watches, but not for the tornado warnings, because the tornado warning, again, they're sending out that wireless emergency alert just to a specific area, and they don't want to alert everybody that there's a tornado warning. They only want to notify those within that specific area of the storm. Also on here, the county utilizes it for road construction projects. So we have, you know, large road construction projects. Residents in that area can go on there and get news message alerts from our highway department saying, hey, we're going to be working on this section of the road, so they can find the alternate routes as well. So it is an option for the public. It's an opt-in to go on, provide their information, and get those messages and alerts. This is that wireless emergency alert sent out by the National Weather Service. That red area, that polygon that I talked about, that the Weather Service sees, and then they'll put a polygon around that area, and when they send out that tornado warning or whatever that notification is, the intent is that those individuals within that area who have cell phones will get that alert. So that way we're not alarming everybody throughout the county. It's only in that specific area that they're noticing that there's going to be some type of severe storm activity or tornado, and they want to make sure that they get those residents notified. Is it an exact science? No, there's going to be some bleed over where you don't hit certain areas. There's been times too where I carry two phones with me, my personal and my private, and my work phone, and one will go off with the alert, and then the other one will be 5-6 minutes, and then it'll finally go off. So they're, it's like technology, it works, you know, and it works, it's great, but unfortunately it doesn't work 100% all the time either. So technical assessments, we looked at, you know, coverage gaps, looking at different areas as the county grows and we get more population in, we get more campgrounds put in, you know, golf courses, other areas that we think that we need additional warning services for, and what does that look like. High population areas, established sound plans, end of life equipment. Really the sirens will, if you maintain them, they're, you know, they'll go a long time. It, you know, it's just like anything, you know, public works and that, you buy Motorola radios, they tell you, hey, it's coming to end of life. Well, that just means that they're just not going to service it anymore through Motorola. It'll still work, it'll still function, but boy, the companies, they'll try to sell you a new one, and they'll try to push through that it's end of life, you need to put it, you know, buy a new siren. But if you maintain it, and the same with the radios, it'll last a lot longer, just like your car. If you maintain your car and change your oil and change the fluids on it, it's going to last longer than if you never change your oil and, you know, you just wait for the thing to break down. So And then communications pathways, currently we utilize a VHF tone to set off our sirens, and working towards that two-way cellular option where when the National Weather Service sends out that wireless emergency alert to your phone, it's going right to those cellular, or those siren towers as well, and activating those sirens too, so. Modernization needs, this is a couple examples of sirens. Some of you may know where those are located in the county, but these are some of our warning sirens that we currently have. Several decades, maybe, you know, probably some of these are probably up to 40 years old, some of these sirens. They still work, but are they doing the community in that area 40, 50 years ago, when maybe some of these had gone in, the community was much smaller. Well, now the community's grown, we want to look at maybe upgrading some of these sites to cover a larger area or be a little bit more efficient.
And then the life expectancy of the one on the right, which is, I believe, similar to ours,
yeah,
is 40-some years old, and it still works good or better, less maintenance than the two that we paid $50,000 a piece for.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not disagreeing with you one bit. So, yeah, if it fits your needs, then we can upgrade it to, like, maybe a better communications board, but the siren still works, I'd say go for it. I'd go, yeah. There's no push for me to say, hey, yes, change all your sirens to the latest and greatest. But we just want to make sure that those sirens function when they need to function. So, replacement, functionality, and age, new siren locations, working with jurisdictions to working whether or not we need to cover certain areas, upgrade options, look like upgrading the wiring, conduit, battery backups. We have some steel cabinets that are aging throughout the county that are starting to rust and getting holes in them. And then what does those control boards look like as well? Are they being updated to ensure that, because we as a county are going to need to start updating our infrastructure that we have to be able to set off the sirens, and we want to make sure that when we do that, that it is capable with all of our sirens so that everything continues to function like it's supposed to. This is some examples of the steel cabinets on the left, and then the new aluminum cabinets on the right. On that right cabinet, that top box, you see how that conduit kind of comes down into a J loop on there. They have that drip loop, so that way any condensation coming from your siren or from the siren head comes down that pipe. It's not going straight into your control boards. We have seen sirens in the county where that conduit comes straight down at a 45 degree angle or straight into that cabinet, and all that condensation that builds up in that conduit over the course of the year drains right into the control board. So we've had that noticed in the county, so addressing those concerns as well. Again, we want to make sure that the infrastructure that we have is lasts as long as we can. So, but addressing small things like that, you're putting a drip loop on so that doesn't short out your $3,000 communication board, a little bit of preventive maintenance on the front end can save us a lot of money on the back side. Funding options, budgets are always tight, costs are always going up, working with shareholders. I know Sourcewell out of Staples has grant opportunities for sirens. I've worked with Ross Lake. They were looking at putting in a siren up there. Sourcewell does have grants available, either through a cost share where they cover percentage of it, 70-80% of the siren cost, or they also have options where they cover the entire cost of the siren. But it's just a matter of applying for it and going through that process to be able to do that. Or if you already have a siren and you need to upgrade the communications boards or infrastructure for that siren, there's grant opportunities to be able to do that as well. Other federal grants that are out there, I applied for another a federal grant here last week for our siren infrastructure for $800,000 to help upgrade our sirens to a two-way cellular option. Whether we get selected or not, time will tell, but again, I'm out there trying to see what we can do for state and federal grant dollars to help out the townships and the cities to be able to pay for some of this so that all that cost isn't coming back on the local stakeholders. Operations and maintenance. We talked about that first Wednesday of the month, being able to do those tests. We kind of refer to them as drills because what we want the public to ultimately hear when they hear that siren, right now it's the philosophy, the siren's going off, the county's testing the sirens. Well, we ask the public to kind of take into consideration when they hear the siren and say, okay, well, if this were a real event and the siren was going off, and depending on where I'm at, where would I go? What would I do? If it was a severe weather once and I heard the siren, if I'm from 50 Lakes, but I'm in the city of Baxter shopping and I hear the sirens going off on that first Wednesday, think about, okay, well, if that was a tornado, what would you be doing at that time? Where would you be able to seek shelter, or what would your plan be at that time? So we want residents to kind of thinking along those lines versus, well, the county's just testing the sirens to see if they work. So, and again, that's a kind of a messaging, working with and getting more of a unified message out there, the intent of those sirens. The maintenance cycle, we ask, you know, our stakeholders currently having a preventive maintenance plan and contract to do that annual maintenance, or, you know, and we find that most agencies, again, it works until it stops working and then try to fix it based off because it stopped working. So wanting to try to establish a maintenance plan so we can address some of the things on the forefront. And, you know, if it's a conduit thing where water's going in there, hey, can we change that, put a drip loop in there so that it's not shorting on your communications board. Batteries, general maintenance and repair, or batteries being switched out like they're supposed to be. I'll show you an example here of that not happening. Maintenance records and civil litigation. You know, when it looks at, hey, you know, you got the sirens there, the public, again, has that expectation that the sirens are going to work when intended. Are they going off? And then if they don't go off and a severe storm goes through, you know, if somebody comes back and says, well, show us your maintenance plan, what does that look like? Have you been maintaining your sirens? And, you know, that could be, a potential liability as well, saying, okay, well, we hadn't done any maintenance. We only do, if something happens or it doesn't work, then we'll fix it. But, you know, having a maintenance plan for that potential civil litigation as well. The next few photos are going to be some of the challenges that we've come across. And just, this is from the county here as well. This is the siren that the fuse kept getting blown on it. You pay to have somebody come out, look at the siren, fix the fuse, replace the fuse, and then when we go to set the sirens off, the next time it blows the fuse again. So, you know, rather than finding the root cause of why the fuse is being blown in the first place, you know, just the fuse is getting, you know, replaced, but not finding the root cause. And this was the root cause here. The motor brushes were, you know, stuck from corrosion. So when they hit we activate the sirens, the siren wasn't rotating, the motor wasn't rotating, which was causing the fuse to blow. So, and again, you know, jurisdictions get frustrated because they pay somebody to come out to fix it. And if you don't have somebody fixing it that knows what they're doing, and they, you know, and then you pay that company two or three times, and then you're racking up costs, and at a certain point you're like, well, why would we continue to beat our head against the wall and pay for this, and it doesn't seem to be working? So we had the company that we had selected for this maintenance program come out, look at this, and they had it up and operational that day. So they were able to get up into the siren. They do a head to toe of the siren, so they were able to figure out the problem and get it.
They were able to rebuild that one rather than replace?
I believe so. I believe they did maintenance. Were able to do maintenance on it where they could get it up there. It wasn't a complete replacement where they could actually.
And then you in mentioning maintenance companies. Yeah. I mean, you would have a few that you deal with. Are you under contract with one for a certain amount?
How
does this work? Maybe I'm getting.
No, it's a great question, Mayor. That's kind of the contract that we're talking about today, because I was being, you know, as emergency manager, I was being asked by state, you know, jurisdictions, well, their siren doesn't work, and they'd come to me and say, well, who should we use? And I really didn't feel an obligation to be able to select one company over another, because then they could come back and say, well, why are you referring business to this company? Or why are you referring business to this other company? Why aren't you using us? And so that was the whole premise of this RFP, to identify who are all the people that are currently doing maintenance and work on all of our sirens in the county, to say, hey, these are the expectations that we're looking for in a maintenance contract. Send this to all of them. They can then provide information back to me as far as this is their proposal to meet all those expectations. And then through the county, we select that whoever was the best qualified. Now going forward, anybody who asks me and says, well, who do you recommend? I can say, well, I went through the process, and this is who I recommend and why. So And again, it's all, you know, litigation, and somebody come back and say, well, why is the county recommending somebody else over this? And
right, it's just nice to know that somebody will try to fix something rather than just
tell you
immediately
you
go to replacement.
To tell you you need something new. So, right. No, absolutely, you know, absolutely. And the company that we selected here, Emergency Communication Systems, I've worked with them. I didn't know anything about them up until the past year, and I was told by them by the city of Cross Lake because they were utilizing them, and they've been great to work with and been very, wanting to work with stakeholders in the townships to fix it rather than, oh yeah, you just need to work.
And they're under contract for a certain amount of time, then, I guess?
Correct. Well, we're looking at a two-year contract.
Two-year contract,
and you can... At a 60-day notice, so if you're not happy with them after the first year and you want to get out of the program, then you can do that.
So what we'd fall under the 45-plus because we signed up as a county, correct?
With
52
of them
in the county. Do you have 52 other sites? Are all other townships in agreement to go with?
No, right now I'm hitting every single township, every city. I've started with the larger cities because that's going to get our numbers up to that 25. City of Cross Lake has already said that they're, want to have the contract. City of Brainerd, I had a meeting with their Public Utilities Commission last week, and they approved it to go forward to the city council for a final approval. The city of Brainerd already has signed a memorandum of agreement with the county for this maintenance program. The city of Breezy Point has already a maintenance program, and they're going to be going to the county maintenance program for their sirens. I just received back the city of Crosby, memorandum of agreement from the city of Crosby today, that they'll be utilizing the maintenance agreement as well. So, thus far, I've had nothing but positive feedback, and they say there's some within the county that are currently utilizing this company and had very good experiences with them.
So at this point, you're somewhere between the 25 and 44 sirens?
Correct. So that $600 mark. And I'm hoping to get up to the 45 so we can bring down that extra $25, but right now I'm very comfortable. We've already hit that 25 mark so we can get that pricing. So. Moving forward, again, with that phase approach, we're kind of, as I look at it, that phase one right now, conducting a top-down inspection of all of our siren sites, getting a full report from this company that's going to be doing the maintenance as far as the type of siren you have, the year it was installed, any information that they can get on it. They work directly with Federal Signals, so if there's any purchase history, if you have old sirens or that, those agencies can get that information as well. I'm looking at what kind of communication boards are they being updated? Are cabinets? Are the conduit that's being utilized? And when the last time the batteries were changed out? Getting a good inventory of what you have, and then I can provide that to you as well. So in the future, you can look that for budgetary. Okay, well, this is a functioning, but it should be addressed at some point. And maybe we don't need to do it this year, but maybe next year we should look at upgrading this portion of the cabinet or whatever it might be. So rather than it going into complete disrepair, which we some of our sites have done, and then now you've got a $15,000 bill. You're faced with the, hey, do we just remove the siren, or we have $15,000 that we have to put into it that we haven't budgeted for. Our next phase is, once that top-down approach inventory has been done, any discrepancies that might have been identified during that, to get those updated. So updating our cabinets to aluminum if need be, any type of conduit, any type of communications boards, so that everything across the board is functioning as it should be. And again, the siren itself may be one of the older sirens, but my main focus is ensuring that siren, regardless of its age, functions like it's supposed to, and that the communications and all the wiring that ensure that gets set off is there in good maintenance. And then phase three is that upgrading all of our sites to that two-way cellular option that allows the National Weather Service to set off those sirens remotely, and then also to have our dispatch center being able to monitor each of our siren sites as well, that they can actually see that the sirens are being activated and that they're functioning like they are intended.
And that sort of thing would be an added cost to the city then?
And that's right now I'm looking at getting a grant to be able to purchase for that. So that was one of the grants that I applied for last week, was to be able to help fund that project. because again, it's like roughly $800,000, and I'm not wanting, you know, I'm not asking the county board to fit that bill, because ultimately, what does that come back? That comes back on the taxpayers. So if we can get federal dollars or grant dollars to be able to cover those costs, that's my ultimate goal. So will there be maybe some smaller costs associated with it on the local stakeholders? Yes, but the bulk of it I want to be covered by grants is my ultimate goal and aim at it. And this next few slides are just kind of more of a breakdown as far as what that looks like as far as these different phases. And by us doing this, again, when I apply for these grants, I can put that in the grant. Hey, the county has a unified maintenance program. We're looking at upgrade all of our sirens. So they can see that we're making the effort to get to that next point rather than, hey, we're just asking for a bunch of money to put into our sirens because we're not looking after them and we want dollars. So out of phase two, we talked about that, you know, doing those upgrades as needed, and then phase three was going to that two-way cellular option for dispatch. Decisions, and this is talked about our working group that we did on there as far as our current, some of our maintenance providers. We had five total that we identified throughout the county. ReadyWatt wasn't on there, they were sent one as well. And we see all those that went out, we've gotten all those proposals back. And those proposals raised, and this was based off per siren, was between $575 and $1,700 per siren to do that. So $575 was with emergency communications, which is the contract that we're looking at utilizing, and then $1,700 was kind of on the far end, was from one of the other agencies, companies that wanted to provide that service as well. So some of them were close around that $600 mark that the emergency communication systems had. But for me, in that request for proposal, I had asked for references from, you know, who had they done business with before that I can actually call and reach out to, and they can say yes, they were happy with the company or they weren't. And this company was the only one that provided not only names but actually phone numbers and said, hey, these are the people that we currently work with and that we currently have countywide contracts with as well, and to be able to give a call to. And I call each all three of them, all three emergency managers from each of those counties, and all three of those counties said previously they had local contractors doing the work for them, and it was nothing against the contractors that were doing the work, but they just didn't specialize in sirens like this company does. And they said ever since they moved to this company, the issues that they've had were basically almost eliminated as far as future follow-on issues or problems that they were having. So the fact that they had done this and this contract, again, helped them in the long term. We sent the RFP back, and again, working with everyone, and that's currently where I'm at now. Now that we've had the county board approve the proposal through emergency communication systems, is now going out to all the cities and the townships and sitting in front of the council and the board to say, okay, well, what, do you have any questions? This is kind of what we want to do in the long term from the county, and give everyone the option to be able to participate in the maintenance contract going forward. So let's see if I missed anything on here. I did have a couple other slides in my other slide deck. I must have added after I had sent Ann this one, but it had some photos of some batteries that we had out there that had exploded in some of the cabinets. And again, it was just one of those things where maintenance wasn't being done, and emergency communication systems fixed that as well. They came up to talk with the township, and the next day, emergency communication systems were going to be in the area working on Cross Lake sirens. So they swung up to Emily and did a maintenance on their siren, the same company, and they fixed Fairfield Township as well based off the batteries that were having issues. They batteries that exploded, hadn't had any, again, any, you know, been changed out, so all four batteries exploded in there. They cleaned all the acid out, washed everything out, got everything up working that day. I had another one where the communication boards were basically, the ants had gotten in there and completely shorted out the communication boards, which required the communications board to be replaced. And this was undoubtedly happening over a long period of time, and had the been inspected annually, they could have identified this ahead of time and been able to get, you know, ant traps or whatever it is on there so that they didn't end up shorting off the communications boards on them. So at this point, I'll open up to any questions that anyone might have for me.
What is the percentage of siren failures? Roughly. You got 52 of them in the county, you just listed off three, so that's pretty low, less than 1%.
Yeah, well, I've had, you know, the ones in Crosby were having issues my first couple of years. They were down for a pretty extensive period of time. We had the one in Jenkins, there was one that we recently fixed in just north of Nisswa, which is a Pequot siren. We just, that one still needs maintenance on it. The rotating head is seized on it, so that needs to be fixed or replaced. But they were able to get the siren working, and they disconnected the rotating portion of it, so the siren will sound, but it just doesn't rotate. Because if it were trying to rotate, it would short the fuse off, and the siren just would go dead. So is it a perfect fix? No, but it's just another example how the company didn't say, well, you need a brand new siren, and we're not going to, you know, fix it, but they were able to had a workaround. They also had a spare communications board that they were able to put in there as well, that they had available, and get the siren working. So although it is it 100% fixed, but no, but it is operational and it does sound when you go off. The Jenkins siren, that was down for the one next to the theater there, that was down for an extended period of time, probably almost 6 months working, trying to get that up and right. There was a lot of issues with that one, but that one's not working. Is up and working now. We also had the one we got from Roosevelt Township. That's been an ongoing challenge as well. That one needs to be inspected and gone through because that one works and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
So out of the 52, it's actually a pretty high percentage.
Yes, we're getting there. We're having a lot of challenges.
Are a lot of these sirens old?
They're old, but just because they're old doesn't mean that they don't, but it's just the maintenance.
This one works better than
the second time,
really,
maybe
third. Yeah, it's really just, it's just the maintenance on them, and you know, you do the preventative maintenance on them, and you get somebody to go in there and walk through, and if they start seeing like the rotary brushes are starting to get a little bit warm, maybe, you know, how do they, you know, prevent the cause of whatever that may be causing that issue, or if there's water running down in your communications board, or if you're seeing ants in there, or the batteries aren't, you know, being load tested every year, it's just that they, you know, they're not being switched out. And you know, some, I know in the city of Baxter, they switch out their batteries every 3 years as not to have issues, but the company said, well, we don't recommend you switching on every 3 years. We recommend every 5 years, because every year they come and they load test them and they can say, okay, well, whether or not they're having any issues with those batteries. And a lot of times it's not the batteries that they're having issues with, it's the charging or the electronically discharging the batteries. That's what the cause is, the problem. As long as that's working, it's charging the batteries like they should, and the batteries are fine. But when that fails, now the batteries aren't getting charged, and when it gets cold, you know, Minnesota, the batteries freeze, and then they explode. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, they're looking, you know, I know the city of Baxter mentioned that, you know, they're not, it's not going to save them, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, but they're looking at the long term that, you know, even not having to switch out batteries every 3 years and extending it to a 4 or 5 year is going to save them, you know, a considerable chunk of change, so. And you're getting the peace of mind that, yeah, every year it's being, the siren's being gone through and inspected, and
somebody knows that they're looking at.
You know, and then somebody's actually gone through and looked at it and tested it and make sure that everything works on it. You know, and then in the contract, yeah, memorandum of agreement itself, you know, says that, hey, you know, I've asked them, I want all these inspected by the 15th of May, so that before we go into that storm season, that, you know, we know that everything's up and running. And a lot of the companies that provided proposals back say, well, we really can't have it done by May. We'll kind of spread it out throughout the year. I'm like, well, doesn't do us any good if it's not working, so we want to make sure that it's working before springtime. And the again, that yet.
Is this something that you want to start doing this year, or is it something we should be budgeting for, being budget talks are going to probably start next month?
So this would be going into effect, essentially, it would be 2027. So that would be the first inspection to be done that between February and May of 2027. Unless there's an issue or something that comes up and any of the stakeholders want to utilize them before that period of time for anything, but the actual just maintenance is through that period of time. And if they identify something during that maintenance, then you're like, no, I want to have somebody else come in and fix it. Again, nothing's saying that you have to use them to fix it either. It'd probably be advisable to use them to fix it, just because they're familiar with it and that's what they do, and they, you know, warranty their work. But again, nothing's holding you to that either, that you have to use them to.
Well, the outfit out of Wisconsin that we bought these from said the next time out, it's going to cost us more money, and they didn't charge us mileage last time, but next time they will.
Yeah.
So being on a contract like that, the annual cost is one service for them to come up and look at one siren.
And that's to say, and a lot of times they don't have the equipment to fix it with because they don't specialize in it. So now they're going to have to think about, okay, what do they think is wrong with it? Then they'll go back and order the part. Hopefully that's what the problem was. When they come back the second time, they start just the next service fee to come out and then put the part in. And if they find out that wasn't the part that was actually wrong, where this company, that's all they specialize in is sirens. They have a lot of spare parts. So if something's not working, they usually be able to identify that on the spot, switch out different parts and replace to figure out what the cause of the issue, the actual root cause of the issue is on site right away, rather than making multiple trips back and forth. And like I said, that was one of the reasons that the Crosby sirens were down for that extended period of time is, we're kind of going through COVID at that time too, and it's hard to get parts and, they didn't have the parts on hand to be able to get it up and operational, where, this company, again, has a lot of those spare parts that maybe they can throw something in as a temporary fix until the actual part that they need comes in and be able to replace it.
Well, they're going to know which ones are having problems. They weren't going to look at this brand today. Might as well grab one of these boards because odds are it's broken.
Yeah, so to get everything up and running. So.
So do you want to rediscuss it next month? Look at the budget?
I love it. It's not going to have to wedge into the budget. So we'd be looking at somewhere around $1,800. We'd have to scratch, plug, or pull.
I would like to have this discussion on our next council meeting, definitely.
Okay.
And that one siren that you have that's on 136, I know that's kind of butts up against the city of Emily there as well, so there could be discussion there as well. They want to maybe help you with some of that cost too. So, for that one site,
right?
Yeah,
that's a good idea. They did donate some money to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, Chester, did you trigger? Did it rotate?
No,
it didn't rotate. Did you trigger it?
I had to test button, but nothing happened.
Okay.
But I don't know if that one is equipped for it or not. I don't know if it's working for that.
Bob Stancer seemed to think there was a code or something. He opened up the box and put in a code.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the time. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk with everyone. And it's been on my list to get around just to meet everyone and talk with the different councils and town boards, but again, it seemed like there's always some other storm or disaster, and I don't really find the time. But this initiative has given me the drive that it needs to happen. So now I'm getting around and actually be able to, an opportunity to meet with everybody. So I appreciate taking the opportunity, and hopefully I didn't take up too much of your time this evening. And if you ever have any questions, please reach out.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Travels or not?
Yeah, because the other offer was out of Wisconsin, like I said. the cost, we still have to pay. Do you remember what I was?
It was a couple thousand. Yeah, I think it was almost a 2,000.
Yeah, that's what
I was. You know, I'd be willing to pull it, to be honest with you, but I don't know where you're going.
Well, you certainly could.
We can vote to put it in the budget for 2027.
Yeah, I'd say let's just put the vote on next month. We'll have a discussion and a vote next month on this.
But I think it's going to be a really good idea.
I will, definitely.
So it sounds like you'll have full support.
Just going to, when I give that number, you for sirens then, so. Wonderful.
All right, well, then we're going to move on.
Thank you.
Get out of your hair now. All right.
Thank you for coming up.
Now, the next thing on new business is road liaison appointment, and I'd like to appoint Juan Rhodes and pull Mark off for now.
That's.
So.
Do you want to vote?
I guess it looks like we need a.
Let me make the motion. I'll make the motion to put Juan on Rhodes.
And a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, now we move into planning and zoning, and I think I'm not going to say much. I'll let Bethany speak, because she's got a lot of talking to do with me.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor Staples. Thank you, City Council. There are four items on the for action this evening. In your packet, starting on page 38, is the final plat application. Island Rentals LLC, the property owner of parcel 22240615, is requesting to subdivide an 18-acre parcel into seven lots. On June 23rd, 2026, during a regular PCBOA meeting, the Planning Commission recommended approval to City Council based on the following findings of fact and one condition. The request is to subdivide an 18-acre parcel into seven parcels. The subject property is located on County Road 136. The proposed parcels are located in shoreland, recreational development, non-riparian. No infrastructure roads are being proposed with this plat. All driveways under access are to be off of the existing County Road 136. Crow Wing County Highway Department was notified on 6-8-26 and they did provide comment regarding application for entrance permits. Minnesota DNR was notified on 6-8-26. No further comment was received. Wetland delineation was conducted by Meister Environmental LLC on 4-27-2026. Site suitability was submitted on 5-12-2026. A park dedication fee equal to 5% of the fair market land value was received on 6-8-26 in lieu of land dedication. An independent plat check was completed by Brustad Land Surveying on 6-8-26. This plat meets the residential and rural development goals outlined in the city comprehensive plan. This plat meets the applicable performance standards in this ordinance. Other standards, rules, and requirements have been considered for the proposed plat. The plat is compatible with the present land use in the area. Environmental impacts have been adequately addressed. The plat does not increase the impact to public health and safety and minimally increases the traffic impact. Each of the proposed tracts meets the minimum lot size and dimensional requirements of their proposed zoning district. In the findings, I have all of those listed. I'm not going to go through them all this evening. And the staff recommendation of one condition, they have met all the other conditions that we did have on it the last time, the preliminary plan. So staff recommendation is for one condition that the plat be in substantial conformance with the presented plan as shown. And deviations from the presented plan will require modified approvals. And we are seeking approval of this final plat.
All right, so at this point, is there any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to ask for a motion.
Make a motion to accept the plat. Consider 26, subdivision of 18-acre parcel. This set of lots.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed.
Thank you.
This is 37 pages.
The second item this evening is a zoning map amendment 0226 to rezone an agricultural zone parcel to a rural residential parcel. The property owner of 22330519, located at 40064 Old County Road 1, is seeking to rezone an agricultural zone parcel to rural residential, a two-acre parcel recently approved with the meets and bounds lot split at the June 23rd Planning Commission meeting. At that same meeting, the Planning Commission recommended approval to the City Council based on the following findings of fact. The subject property is located at 40064 Old County Road 1. The property owner and the request to rezone the 2-acre area from agricultural to rural residential. The area proposed to be rezoned is fully developed and compatible with the 50 Lakes Comprehensive Plan. The subject property is suitable and in general conformance with the land use standards of the Rural Residential Land Use District. The area proposed to be rezoned is not within shoreland. The land use ordinance states that the rural residential district is intended to be semi-rural in character and to allow low-density residential and compatible agricultural uses outside of the shoreland area. The property located to the north is zoned rural residential, and the property located to the east is zoned forest management. Property located to the south and west is zoned agricultural. Rezoning the property will not be detrimental to uses or property in the immediate vicinity of the subject property, and rezoning of the property promotes the health, safety, and general welfare of the public. Staff recommended is that the rezoning request be approved contingent upon the approval of the meets and bounds lot split, and that was approved by the Planning Commission. If you have any questions at all, I'd be happy. I know there was a certificate of survey that was included.
Make a motion that we go ahead and pass 02-26 rezoning an agricultural zone parcel into rural residential.
And second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I would also like a motion to publish the summary for that reason.
For both of them then, or just?
Just for the rezone.
Okay.
We are required to publish the survey, because this is like an ordinance amendment. This changes the ordinance when you change the zoning map.
Even though it's just for one particular lot?
Correct. So the zoning map is an adoption. It's part of the land use ordinance, and as such, we treat it as an ordinance amendment. And so when that zoning map changes, we have to publish that in the paper.
Okay. I make a motion to pass the ordinance for the...
Yep, just to publish the summary.
We'll publish the summary.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The staff report on page 106 and 109 just details the last meeting that we had. There were three meets and bounds slot splits that were approved by the Planning Commission. The final plat and zoning map amendment came before you this evening. There should be a list detailing all the applications that the city has received, and then information on all the permits that have been approved through July 6th of this year. I'd be happy to answer any questions about those. Moving on. Okay. The next item is a request from Don Ryerson to switch to an alternate position. 50 Lakes was fortunate enough to have a lot of people apply to be on the Planning Commission, that we do have a full Planning Commission plus an alternate. And Don Ryerson has asked to be removed from a full member to being the alternate. And we'll need a motion on that.
How long is he? I'll make that motion and move Don from. Can we just do it one motion? And
yeah, I think so. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. And so then the other approval was to move Belinda Urich, who is the alternate currently, into the full-time Planning Commission.
So I'll just make it all in one motion that we accept Don Ryerson to step down and become alternate, and Belinda Urich become a full member position of the Planning Commission.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Real quick, how many, I'm sorry, how many years was Don on there?
Said 15 plus years.
Oh, I didn't, oh, then it was a write-up. Okay, I was going to say forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just a reminder, after a motion is made and seconded, then you call for discussion.
Oh.
Before the vote, just a reminder. Okay.
All right, then I think that's it for zoning.
Does anybody have any questions? All right, well, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Then we move on to parks with Tony.
Okay, this update on the park open house. I kind of thought we'd maybe put that off, or things have just been really busy and things, we get new equipment coming, we're working on the outside, some new tiles with the tiles that are there, and yes.
I think we'll just circle back once the new equipment comes and gets installed and then see.
What is that? How far out?
I don't know.
Did you look into that double swing thing? Okay.
Jessica has, yeah. The cost on that wasn't feasible with the grant, but it's, so we ordered the swings, but it is something we can put in, take out a swing and put it in, yes. So I think once this is done and installed, then yes. And same with Don did ask me about the wood chips and getting something different. And I said the same thing. We've been looking at the cost on it. It's quite expensive. But, you know, with getting that park dedication fee, maybe that will help with some of that. Probably not the wood chips, but maybe the swing it would. Yeah. So, yes, it is on our list.
How many tiles do you have to be re-etched, or do you have re-hung?
We don't have to have any redone.
No, that you could take it in money that you have.
Oh, God, I haven't counted for so long, but I know she's got another order pending to send in. So if you want a full report, we can do that next month.
I'm just curious, a rough amount, if we've got 25 or if we've got 50 or...
No, probably right around 25, I would say. Yeah, and we've been, you know, kind of lax on that with how busy it's been in promoting that, but today Tony and I and Jessica met over there, and Chester's going to take, because when the tile guy did the grouting, he kind of made a mess with the black grout, and so we visited with Chester. He's going to find some gray paint and clean that up, and we're looking at siding to put maybe some siding, like a wainscoting below the tiles, and then do trim and really try to pop it out and then really start promoting it. And Tony suggested signage right there saying when you walk up, you see, hey, this is a tile fundraiser.
Well, that'd be great. Because the other thing that really needs to be addressed too probably this summer is that gable end. It's not going
to
make it.
I'd really like to put like a something. You know, we're talking about using an LP Smart Lap siding or a similar LP product with a diamond coat finish, and they do make like a shake, and I think that would look pretty nice up there.
Well, it's going to be some that's broken up quite a bit because with that CDX is already falling apart. It's got waves in it. So if you ran long siding, it wouldn't look...
Right, that's where, you know, those shakes are about 3 feet wide, and, you know.
And you can blend in. If you look at that, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's falling apart.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of weather, and we'll have to deal with that.
Then the other thing, Tony, I didn't know if you wanted to bring up, is today we were talking about calling a couple well drillers out, because the splash pad, it's amazing the amount of people at it every day. But it's so disheartening to see already the discoloration in the features.
I called it up before it was even built.
Well, yeah, and I get that, yeah, and respect that. But my question is, you know, the well, when I had all the water tested here, Patty's, the park, the fire hall, and then the neighbor, the new well is the deepest well and it's the worst well, you know, with the water testing. Is it worth having a a well driller come out and just assess it and see if we were to put in a shallower well and do like you had said, then that's for the pumper truck or to fill trucks, the other one. There's no guarantee, I'm sure, but even if we could cut the iron in half, I don't know. It's just a thought.
Yeah, it'd be a good road to go down. Did we have? Why did we go that deep to begin?
That's what
to go down there for the volume
production.
Yes.
For volume, because we were told that we had to, 30,000 gallons a day or something. So that's why they went that deep. They had a better pocket of water on the way down.
Yeah.
But it didn't have that 30,000 gallons like we were told. I would almost like to put a monitor to see how much our water usage is. So then if we do decide to go with another well driller, we can tell them what the actual specs are. What we were told was kind of malarkey.
I remember that conversation. We both went.
Yeah. And I think so it is what it is. And like I said, in talking to the well drillers that did that, they went through a pocket that was...
Is it even wet in the...
Oh, yeah, it's coming around to the corner here. But that thing's very humid.
It's in the water part.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that culvert, that 8-inch is flowing solid.
Really? So
yeah.
8-inch might not have been enough?
Oh, it's handling it, I think. Yeah, it's fine.
Because we had them spec it for that.
Yeah. And no, it's handling quite well, but I'm guessing it's up around the corner there. But.
Do you know what something like that would cost, where it would need council approval? Should we do some shopping on that and bring it back?
Well, you know,
what did the previous well cost?
No.
You got it?
6-inch pipe, 6-inch water meter. Water meter for a 6-inch pipe is around $1,500.
Oh. That would tell us
But that $1,500 might save you $2,000.
That way we could tell a well driller what we're looking for. And of course, a well driller can't tell you what's underground. They just drill down and try to see, you know, there's no precise deal to drilling wells.
Over $1,000 needs council approval.
Exactly.
If we want to, that would be. So this would be the time to put it on, because we're going to know. It might take us a week to get that thing, but then we'll know for sure what we're.
Right.
The sooner we start monitoring, the more we know.
Yeah. And that's something that just seems to be the right way to do it, so we can have the information that we need to go to the well driller.
Well, totally up to you.
We check around some, because I know I found one for $650 that we could put out there. It's got the fittings right where the filters are at.
Could have had it right on there.
Could have it right there, so where anything gets metered, we know exactly how many gallons we're using.
Okay.
In our building, in parks and building repair supplies, we budgeted $7,600 and we spent about $2,000. So we do have a little bit of... quite a bit of room there.
Oh, he just found room for $600.
I think that's the first thing we've got to do before we speak to any well drillers.
Chester, do you think you need anything over $1,000?
If we get into that same pocket that I'm guessing everybody else is in, that 100 to 119 feet or whatever, is that going to suck everybody dry on days like today where that thing doesn't shut off?
The neighbor over there, your Kenmore, is still talking. And,
yeah. All of a sudden, Jake's washing the car, and it's like, the water. Yeah.
Right now, we're way below everybody else.
Way below, we're far enough down.
Right.
Well, he said he found another one for $400, so maybe he'll just order one then.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get that. Figure out what our requirements really are, and then proceed on this. We'll talk.
But it wouldn't hurt if Chester's got time to open up a conversation with a well driller and the University of Minnesota for that part, much, because I don't think the well drillers, they just kind of look at what the overall chart. I don't think they sit down and study it.
Right. And what you just said should be that we don't wipe out the neighbor's water.
Yeah.
And that might be something that's more wildland. I don't know, Chief. Free studies the aquifer itself. But somewhere along the University Extension Services, somebody does.
Well, they've been hauling that radar over the area in the helicopter here lately.
I can't believe they're working on a holiday.
Yeah, Andrew Schweitzer showed me pictures.
Yeah,
4th of July, they're flying over his place.
Why would they do it on the 4th of July? Isn't that like double time on a holiday?
They did it all weekend. Yeah, they did it all weekend.
Yeah, why would you do it on a weekend when there's guys, gazillion million people up here all watching you?
Yeah.
Unless you're doing it for the exposure. If they would have done it today, there wouldn't be anybody outside.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we'll move on from parks, unless there's anybody has anything to say anymore about parks.
Can we look into doing something on the Gable Inn more sooner than later? Is the money there?
Let's look into it. We're right now looking at the corner pieces and the siding for around the bottom, a wainscot basically, is what we're going to do, and maybe we would add that on to it.
Yeah, just went down to Simonson Lumber today and got a box of samples.
Oh, good.
So we can start working on it because we want to match it up.
We were talking about the gable too when we were over there today. We were talking about matching the tiles and stuff. We were talking about getting some of that. It needs to get finished.
Yeah.
Well, it's starting to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Then we'll move on to fire and rescue, and that is Tony again.
And Jesse.
We received our water this on Friday last week that we got donated, that we won through a grant. So we got that done there. We've been using it the last few calls, kind of to drink water out of a can. But it's wet and it's cold, so we had 5 fire calls last month and 6 medical calls in June. We've already been on 9 calls in July already. It's very busy.
Wow.
Even the busiest, I've never seen it this busy before. So kind of the northern part of the county has been busy. Us and Emily, pretty busy. So I think that's all I got for that. Water and the calls.
Thank you, Jesse.
I have a note on here about a truck payment. Do we want to discuss that? Or?
Well, I just wanted to know what council would like to do. There's, where did I write it down? $1,300.
Final pay, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. There's $1,393.12 in the account. I don't know if there will be, I don't want to just count on a donation from you guys.
Definitely not.
So there is in the budget a $12,000 debt bond budget, okay, that I think is for that. It was set up years ago. We budgeted $12,000 every year. I'm guessing it's for the truck payment if it is not made. So I would like to see enough money transferred to, so I can transfer it into the truck fund to make the payment it's due.
From the bond?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I'm guessing we need a...
And it's not a fire and rescue. Yep. Let me get the actual, what it's called. Let me see here. I have it.
Is that one of the ones that's been transferred?
It is debt service bond principle.
Okay.
I make a motion that we use the debt service bond principle moved into the truck account to make the payment.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Yeah, I think that's it. Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Okay, then I believe we move on to road construction. And Mark? Well, I don't know.
So storm damage. We've had quite a bit of storm. I think you all read the email. The fire department went out and opened up one lane wherever it was applicable. Out of Chester filled out some paperwork with Clayton to try to get some of that federal grant money to recover for time spent with Chester, because I'm sure he's got many hours of cleanup. And I did field 3 different phone calls in the past 10 days from Tom Strack. We've had some residents dumping on Crow Wing County tax forfeit land, and he's just going to go ahead and put up, he threatened to put up gates. I asked him if we could have one more chance. He says, all right, but I'm going to put up the gates. That'll give you a solid wooden post to attach your signs to. And they did put up some no dumping signs. He didn't. He had his helper do it. And he put them up on oak trees. He did put flagging around them, but it's on an oak tree that's 20 feet off.
It is. What type of wordage would we want on this sign? How would we want it? Is there anything that we...
Oh, half begging, please don't.
Just a big sign that says, please no dumping or you'll close down county property type.
So they are closing them?
Some of those are trails that many people on Kiva Lake use. One, I'm sure Greg trapped back at the, just over what I call Baker Hill that goes all the way back to the dam between Kego and Fox.
How many do we need? How many do we need?
Tom and I counted them up today, 5.
Okay, so we've got.
We haven't had any issues on Whitetail, but
we should post it.
If we do it uniformly, it'll be.
Because they'll see the sign here and then go to Whitetail.
Tom Strack and I talked about it. We figured 5.
So what are they dumping? I'm just
brush. Just refuse brush.
Oh, brush and stuff. Yeah, it's just too bad that we don't have some place for people
well,
to dump.
Well, and on that same note, he and I did discuss, and remember we talked about it, I don't know if you were on council, we talked about that piece going into Edgewild.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how many acres that 12. Was. It's like, it was 12.
I believe.
And I don't remember what the dollar amount is. Like, we really don't need that much land, but we would have, if we could have some place everybody could dump.
You know, and we did look into some dumping, and it's a lot of extra work because it has to be monitored very closely. I found that out in that meeting we had on roads, I think, with Brian. Yeah, so
yeah, he highly recommended not doing it.
Yeah, and so that's kind of a discussion how we really need to have on that, because I noticed that they've shut theirs down until further notice. I'm sure it's full and they just are overwhelmed, and you know, they, because of their monitoring. And but I just saw a post on that within the last couple of days that they
shut
it down until further notice.
We should put something on a city site too, or this wherever people go to look at the city of 50 Lakes and
well, on just
put
the
no, but no, there's no dumping.
We did when, after Mark called.
I called Ann right away because I was like, as soon as he threatened to put up gates on all the trails, it's like.
Well, but yeah, I'd like to see some signs made, and we need to get them up there. Yeah.
Do you guys want to work on verbiage, and or who do you want to work on that, or does Tom have?
He had no thoughts either. Theirs are just the generic no dumping state DNR signs.
Okay.
They're only about this big.
Yeah, we could, I think it would just be no dumping trash or refuse.
Probably should be labeled no public dumping.
Public dumping.
No, it should be
to make sure that the public is not going to use it. This, what you're trying to do is keep the public out.
Well, I think it should state that there's no dumping of leaves or sticks. And we'll figure something out.
Okay.
How
big do you want it?
Big. I'd like to see them. Yeah, at least.
At least.
Okay.
I don't know how big we can make or who. How.
Well, are we making them or do you want metal signs?
He said it's up to us.
Okay.
He said it's up to us. He says otherwise, because he's ready to just close the gates now. When he called me, it was storm was Monday or a week. So probably last Wednesday when he called me, he says, well, I'm just going to put up gates. And say, oh, can we have, give us one more shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to put up the gates. He's not going to close.
Because that'd be the fastest, is to make them and laminate them and mm-hmm. see if they weather, even just to stop it immediately.
How big ones can we do? How big can you make a laminate?
11 by 17.
Let's go to that maximum, try that to start with, and if they go to heck on us, we'll get some more permanent.
The size of like an election sign, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to put something.
You could say something too on there about, you know, if dumping continues, these roads will be closed to public use.
Yeah.
They do that on the ATV trails. They tell you, you know, if you speed, you know, these trails will be closed and you won't be able to use them. So
and the gate's going to be right there, right?
Right, you can see it.
And put a lock on it.
Yeah.
And you're done.
Yeah.
No, we can probably get that done tomorrow.
Yeah, I think we can come up with.
If it doesn't get addressed, he says that, he said, I'll give you a month, he said, the next time I see one, he's going to close the gate, put a lock on it, and done.
I wouldn't mind seeing them all, you know, all later the next week.
Oh, I bet Justin, between the two of us, we can get them done, and then if Chester would take us out, just zip tie them on and see if it.
Because people are, I went to Brainerd the other day, and how many trailers did I pass? Hauling.
There'll be people all this weekend with doing cleanup, so yeah, if we could have it done before the weekend, I'd like to have that done.
Okay.
All right, any more discussion on that? Then we're going to move over to Randy and Electric Store.
Yeah, if you look on report, 112 shows a year-to-date for 2026. We're in mid-color numbers right now, so $2,300. And if you look on the following page, discuss year-to-date, nearly $7,000 for 2028, so we're fast approaching.
That's a negative, though, last year.
Yeah, that's correct.
Negative $7,000.
I didn't know if you wanted to delve into 50 Lakes Days.
Sure, we can.
What difference weather main takes, and pretty good turnout for staff-wise, and I want to thank everyone that worked on this, so. We finished up about 5 out of the 10 past years of roughly $18,000. That's about all she wrote on that.
All right, then we have management position on that. That's something that comes up every month, and I think that has to do with Anna. How she's feeling about.
Well, I think it's too how the council's feeling.
And I, yeah, if we have one discussion on that, I mean, the P&L that Randy just read is pretty good, I think. And, you know, it's I think things are going well.
Things seem to be going well, I think, anyways. I don't know. Employees seem pretty happy.
Yeah.
I like to see that.
Yeah. So with that, I think that's still pretty good on that. Then we would like to approve to hire Trevor Johnson as a part-time bartender. We're going to need a motion and a second on that, please.
Our discussion. I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. With that, we move on to Mayor's Report, and we have the approval of Resolution 2026-11, the Meehy Property Purchase Agreements, which is on pages 113 to 115.
A motion that we purchase the Meehy property, Resolution 2026-11.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Jesse.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you, Jesse.
I just got a question after the fact, I guess. That's this over here, correct?
Yeah.
What is the plan for an approach over there? Because we are curious as a landing zone.
Yeah, I don't know when we're going to get one, but we are going to get one. We've got to put two in on that, one for Meehy's and then one for ourselves.
Okay.
But after we get everything finalized, that's why.
Is that on this sheet? Do we have to put one for Meehy's? Is that?
That was part of our agreement, purchase agreement, yes.
So we're going to put a second one in down County Road?
Wherever the company will allow us, I guess. But that was part of our agreement with them.
Can we get one on either side of that water?
You know, in the beginning, I would certainly like to, but they're very stingy with their approaches. And
it's still past the bar entrance.
Yeah, well, that's something that we would, I think we should have too. There, I've always thought that.
I know.
but they're kind of stingy, and I think that's going to have to be a discussion with the county on that. All right.
And did Skeet say where he wants the second one put in?
He does, just as long as he can get one. He's pretty open, I believe. All right, we'll move on to approve election judges and wages. And we have a wage sheet on 116. Just kind of shows what they've made over the years and how things have progressed there. So I'll need a motion and a second on that also, please.
Just so you understand, I put in a dollar raise, but that's up to you. We budget $2,000, and that is...
It's way under.
Yep. Yep, and it looks like the average is about 15 to 19 per election.
We're running right in the, down the center pretty much.
So do we need a motion for a raise
please.
First?
Just if you just do the appointment of the judges with a dollar increase.
I make a motion that we accept the list of new and additional judges, election judges, and with a $1 raise for 2026.
Second. All in any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, then we have notice of a local election. We have that on page 117. Today was the first day we opened up for people to file, and it will end on Tuesday, July 28th.
Why is it such a short window?
It's always 2 weeks. It's, I believe it's state statute.
So the mayor...
be in that 2 weeks to run?
Yeah. So it might not be a statute, I'm sorry, but it is part of the election. They set all the parameters for that. The state.
So there are two council member seats open and the mayor's seat. So, all right, and then we come on to water testing, and that's something gentleman from Emily. This has to do, I believe, with that manganese mine or that they're doing, and I think they want to go around and do water testing. Probably, I'm guessing, before and after to kind of make sure that these mines aren't doing anything horrible to us.
Do you need a loan?
I don't think we, I think it's just an informational thing pretty much, isn't it?
No, I think he wants us to send this.
Oh, he wants us
to support it, yes.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Page 119.
I mean, it's just a sample letter that doesn't
yes.
be included.
Right.
But he wants us to send something similar.
And I'd be very...
Oh, so he wants us to... So we have to put together a mailer?
No, I think we just send it to Melissa at Crow Wing County Soil and Water. Supporting this. Yep. Because it sounds like they're partnering with other entities and writing grants.
So this might be the part we'll talk about which aquifer you... As far as our role for the...
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because if she's studying this, she's studying which aquifers are where.
Right, right.
And there's enough wells drilled around here. You know, what type of well driller, he knows within 2 feet how far he's going to drill.
Right, right.
On each house. There's the anomaly that, for the most part, they know right where they're going.
So I just need a motion that city staff... Maybe with the mayor or someone. I mean, I would just go with the letter that she's recommended and put our name in it and sign it. I've read it.
I'll make a motion that we put our name to the letter issued to us and go ahead and send it.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, then we've got an update on 50 Lakes Day. I believe Randy kind of took care of that already, so we'll go to... Oh, for our next month, we have to reschedule our regular council meeting because of elections.
And
can you go to the previous Monday? The 12th is a fire meeting. Or go to 5:30. See, if it were for Clay, oh, we'd probably be out here in an hour.
Yes.
My apologies. I always wish I had told you, given the short version. I know we were all kind of tired of it by then.
Well,
could we move this earlier? 5 or 5:30?
Would that work for you?
Yeah, maybe we'll go 5:30 instead of 6.
Yeah. What time's your fire meeting?
7.
Yeah, I'd be willing to move it to 5:30 on Wednesday, the 12th. And I need a motion.
I'll make a motion that we move the August meeting from Tuesday, August 11th to Wednesday, August 12th, and with a start time of 5:30.
Second.
All, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And
we got to move the CD yet, or was that in consent?
That was in your consent, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, I don't think I've really got anything on purchasing or personnel response. I'm finished doing
a motion to adjourn.
I've got a motion to adjourn. May I get a second?
Second.
All in favor?